Hi, this is Laurie. Welcome to Shamanic Works. Today I have with me my friend, Deborah Swingholm, who is a shamanic practitioner in the Midwest of the U.S. and is basically Flowering Moon, which you may have seen. So, hi, Deb.
Hi, Laurie. Thanks for asking me to be here.
Well, I'm so glad that you could join us for the show. We're going to be discussing creativity and shamanism and how the role that creativity plays in the life of the shamanic practitioner and that shamanic work plays in the life of the artist and the creative person, because we are all creative people. Before we begin, however, what we're going to do is, as always, open sacred space and invite the spirits of the directions to be here with us and to inform this discussion. So, if you are in a place where you can face east, then please do that. And east is vaguely the direction in which the sun rises, if you've got that in your mind inside of whatever building you're in, if you are. And if you don't, then you get to select a direction and let that be magical east, and that will be east for the rest of this conversation. So if you can, face yourself east, and we will speak to the spirits of east. Spirits of the east, you who throw open the gates of the dawn and invite us to greet the sun. You who are the midwives of new beginnings in ourselves and in our minds, the nurturers of the seedling and the infant, the nourishers of that which is tender, not yet strong, the fierce defenders of that which is awkward and young. Teach us to nurture, nourish, and defend our new beginning, to allow ourselves to be weak and ignorant when we begin, so that we may grow to be strong and kind. Be present here with us now. Make your wisdom known. And now we'll take a quarter turn to the right and face south. Spirits of the south, you who carry in your hands the fury of fire, the heat of midday, the fruition of deep satisfaction of high summer. You who are the dancers of exultation, the singers of mighty song, who fill our mouths with laughter and our hearts with joy, even while our eyes brim with tears. Teach us to stand skin to skin with the earth, our mother, to feel her breath in our body, and the surging tides of her ocean in the pulse of our own blood. Be present here with us now. Make your wisdom known. Now we will take another quarter turn to the right, face west. Spirits of the west, you who throw open the gates of dusk at the closing of the day, who prepare our eyes, your gentle twilight, for the velvet darkness. You who teach us to be impeccable warriors, with no need of enemies in this life or in any other, to travel light so that we may dance across the rainbow bridge into the unseen and the unknown, and bring back the wealth of wisdom we find there, to be powerful and utterly powerless in the space of the same breath. Teach us, teach us, teach us. Be present here with us now. Make your wisdom known. We turn a further quarter turn to the right and face north. Spirits of the north, you who inhabit grace the dark and hidden places, amongst whom are our ancestors, those who have the heart to make the epic journey beyond death, return to stand at our side, to guide and teach us, at our back to defend us, ancestors of our DNA and ancestors of our hearts. Teach us also to journey through and beyond life on no resources, sipping the sweetness from each moment as a hummingbird sips drops of nectar and finds abundant sustenance there. Be present here with us now. Make your wisdom. Now raise your hands over your head if you can, if you're in that sort of situation. And if you're in a place where you can't do that, send your thoughts up above you. Spirits of above. Papa Sol, our star, Grandmother Moon, who stretches our days and nights and marks out the months, star nations from whose dust we and this earth, our home and mother, are formed. Shine your light upon us, that we may see clearly the path we are walking, individually and together, that choices as yet unimagined and uninvented may become visible to us. Let your wisdom mingle with ours, so that our steps are guided by both. Be present here with us now. Make your wisdom known. And then reach to the below, to the earth. If you can, reach down and put your hand on the floor or on the earth. And if not, send your thoughts that direction. Earth, my mother. Earth, my mother. Earth, my mother. You of whose stuff we are, from whom we arose and back to whom we return, and whose we remain the whole time in between. Remind us always that we are bone of your bone, blood of your blood, breath of your breath. Teach us to walk with grace upon your skin, to dance with generosity upon your belly, and to walk in beauty with all our relations, your other children. You are present here now. Lean into us. Make your wisdom known. So here we are then, in the embrace of sacred space, in a safe place to have whatever conversation we need to have. And we are graced with having Deb here, who's going to talk with us about creativity. And before you do that, Deb, could you tell us just a little bit about how you found your feet on the shamanic path?
Oh, goodness. it was one of those moments where the wounded healer emerged. Long story short, I had been ill and pretty much hit bottom physically, emotionally. My body was giving up. My adrenal glands had given up. I was severely anemic. I was clinically depressed. And kind of at the bottom of that is when I started to see messages from the spirit world. And I saw messages and advertisements from a shamanic practitioner. And another message came in through one of Sandra Ingerman's books. And without knowing what soul retrieval was, I instinctively knew that's what I needed to do. And the first soul retrieval that I ever had was literally, I think, life-saving. I don't know that I would have recovered my health if I hadn't done a soul retrieval. And that was really my first step on the path. After that, I started, you know, studying and reading and expanded my intuition. I started studying feng shui. I became a Reiki master. It just kind of unlocked all the doors.
Absolutely. And for those who may or may not know what soul retrieval is, can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Well, soul retrieval is a shamanic practice it's ancient. The concept is that in a trauma or an illness, the soul can shear off parts of itself, and when those pieces are lost, the person can become ill or even die. So healing is facilitated through bringing those lost pieces back to the self. And in my case, a pretty large soul piece had decided to exit.
And when we say soul piece, we're really talking about a piece of your own vitality, piece of what it is that powers you and has you be alive. And so in the absence of them, one of the symptoms would be feeling less alive, really.
Yeah, feeling less alive, feeling out of it, like just deeply out of balance, feeling like something's wrong or missing and you just can't get back to a sense of wholeness. Sometimes a particular illness or symptom.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, one of the classic callings to be a shaman is if you fall deeply ill and it goes on, you know, and it's the only way out of it, it seems, is to take up the mantle of learning shamanism, so to become a neophyte shaman trainee. And that would be classically what you've just gone through, and I've been through, and loads of people who find their feet on this path have been through. It's one of those hitting rock bottom things like you just described, where really you can't see a way of just, you know, life going on, and you're just climbing out of that hole, and it'll be fine, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, and it was. I think another call with you, I talked about, you know, I had worked with a nutritionist, and I found just enough of a toehold physically and emotionally to realize that I really was at the bottom of a very deep hole. And I was like, oh, look, I found a rock to stand on. And now from this rock, I can see there's an up. There is another direction to go here.
Yes, I mean, it is the beginning of realizing that you could recover, you know, whereas before it's you just are in the space you're in.
Yeah, and having that soul peace returned and then coming into a relationship with my totem animals and power animals and my teachers in the spirit realms, those were the things that fed me and nourished me and immediately started a healing process. I mean, it wasn't like a really long thing. It was really fast.
Mm. Yes, I'm not, knowing you, I'm not surprised to hear that, but I do think that is probably more typical than we would credit it with, because when someone has a debilitating condition, we think, well, long convalescence, you know, is due here. But it does really come back to you quickly when you've had a piece of your own vitality return, especially a large piece.
Yeah. And I understand that most people do say that they feel differently and better pretty quickly, if not immediately.
Yes. There is that flush of energy and relief and a much more of a sense of wholeness, even if you have multiple soul parts that have to be, you know, retrieved or find their way home. Then, you know, you still, each time one arrives, you've taken a step up.
Mm-hmm.
Say this from experience. You have definitely taken a step up. Yes. So I'm going to shift gears because I have looked at things that have come away from your hands that were really artistic and gorgeous. And so what led you into the whole realm of making, which you have done a lot of, I think, in the last number of years?
I've always been a maker. I mean, as a child, I made things, I drew things, I wrote music, and that's always been a part of me. And I, you know, I've gone through periods where I just didn't, and then it surges again. Interestingly, it seems to my creativity and what I make is very linked to where I am on the planet. So I've moved around a lot and I've lived overseas. I've lived in Asia, the Middle East. And, you know, it's just interesting how everywhere I am, my creativity takes just a little bit of a turn.
Yes. Are you thinking that's just because you are in a relationship with the piece of land where you are living?
I'm not sure. I'm still kind of investigating that. But yeah, I do think it's related to the piece of land I'm living on or the call of a particular modality in a place. I don't know. So when I was, you know, when I was young and I lived in Ohio, I noticed that music and drawing were primary. In Asia, where I lived for 11 years, photography became the primary modality of creativity and self-expression. And then, you know, having moved back primarily to the States again, I've seen music bubbling back up where it kind of had been absent. Photography took a little bit more of a back seat, and now sometimes it's just crazy things like, okay, today we're going to make a feather fan, and yesterday I made a walking stick, and
yes,
it just seems to take different forms depending on where I am. I've found that interesting, and I think it may be due to the land and the piece of ground I'm on, and maybe the people I'm surrounded by. I'm not entirely sure, but it's just something I've noticed.
Yes, and probably all of those things, I would think, really.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of factors. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what relationship you see between shamanic work and creativity, because that's a thing that I think a lot of us feel that we're not very creative. And I would say from my own life, I've had to address that sense by looking at what a creative undertaking life is anyway. You know, you have to come up with solutions to things that happen in your life, and that's a form of creativity. So including that, as well as crazy, gorgeous things that you make. I would love to hear from you about what you think.
Well, first of all, I think we are all creative beings. And I think we get, I hear it a lot. Oh, I'm not creative. I'm not artistic. I don't have any talent. I mean, it's something you hear people say a lot. And from my perspective, creating is just a natural human way of being.
Well, yes.
Yeah, I mean, we are makers. If I go back and I look at some of the most ancient art and artifacts, there is an artistry to the most simple pot, cooking pot, that is just, it's poetry. So I know that every single person is creative, and I think it's a matter of listening. Instead of trying to be artistic, a lot of times I am pulled by the object. So I'll just give you an example. I got a batch of goose feathers about 3 weeks ago for a project. I've been making a smudge kit so I can send it, and people have exactly everything they need to smudge and bless their homes. And in part of the kit, I made a little goose feather fan. I went absolutely crazy with these goose feathers. They were my muse for 2 weeks. Some of them had really short shafts, so I couldn't do with them what I initially had envisioned. So I just sat with the goose feather, and the goose feather started instructing me as to what to do. You know, add this, wrap it this way. And pretty soon I ended up with a whole other kind of handle than I had originally envisioned. So I did some with pine handles, and I did some with a wool handle with a wrap. And the feather instructed me. So I think in a shamanic sense, creativity flows out of listening.
Yes. And once again, I just want to go back. If we have a listener out there who wasn't with me for the conversation in October with Jamie Meyer, one of the things that we said very clearly that is fundamental to the shamanic path is that everything is alive and everything has its own variety of sacred intelligence. And so although I'm probably not going to expect the goose feather to take on human form and sit up on the arm of my chair and begin to instruct me, I am going to be listening with my heart and with my intuition in order to have that creativity arise out of that conversation, basically, the asking and listening and the object saying something to me.
Absolutely. It is a conversation with the object. So if I'm working with a piece of wood, you know, the wood, the twig from the oak tree starts to, as you say, have a conversation. It instructs me, look at this, you know, look at this discoloration here. What shape is it? And, you know, does that need to be, I mean, sometimes it's as simple as don't sand this part or sand this off.
Yes. Yes. And in the meantime, you are probably, although you may not be consciously doing it, saying somewhere in yourself to that object, here is the general gist of what I'm thinking I might want from you. You know, maybe. And then it...
Well, I do start with an intention. So I'm sitting down and I'm initially saying, I'm going to craft a feather fan, or I'm going to craft a wand or a staff. There's an initial intention, but, and I might have a thought in my head about how this thing's going to turn out. And midway through, very often it's like, no, we're going to, it's going to go that way. It's going to take this shape.
Yes. And so I'm assuming you just go with that when that happens.
Well, I've learned to go with that, because when I don't go with that, it tends to like just sort of gum up the works. When it's not working, when something's not coming together, I have learned to stop and pause and say, did I miss an instruction here? Did I miss an intuition? Am I trying to force something my direction instead of allowing the conversation?
Yes.
And sometimes it's obvious. I was thinking, you know, I make these tiny little spirit dolls. They're like if you've ever read the book Women Who Run with the Wolves, there's a story about Baba Yaga and Vasilisa the Brave. And Vasilisa is sent by her stepmother into the forest to get hot coals from the old witch Baba Yaga because the fire's gone out. In her pocket, she carries a tiny doll that was gifted to her by her mother before her mother died. And I won't give away the whole story, but in the end, it is the little tiny doll that gives her the instructions to carry out all of the witch's tests so that she can be rewarded with fire in the end. And to me, the doll represents your intuition.
Yeah.
Your insight that you get from your lineage of mothers, all of their collective wisdom that you carry with you. So when I'm making these dolls, they get very, very specific about, you know, what bead, what herbs I put in them, what shawl, which piece of silk they get wrapped around their little shoulders. And I have to laugh because sometimes it's so obvious. I go to put a bead on and it literally jumps out of my hand, falls on the floor and screams, no, not that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So sometimes you really can physically tell then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think, okay, this is the bead. And then it's like, yeah, nope, that's not the bead.
So you have to hang pretty loose, I would think. You know, stay fairly relaxed with yourself and with the materials.
Exactly.
Yes, in order to...
And I like having a lot of materials on hand.
Yes.
I don't tend to throw anything away, which makes my art room and most of my house pretty, I won't go as far as to say cluttered, but it borders on it sometimes.
Yes, I can imagine, but you never know when that's...
I never know, you know, this bit of twig, this bit of yarn, this piece of wool, you know, I can't throw that stuff away. It's definitely going to be used on something.
Yes, absolutely. I laugh because I have, my sister sent me a little spirit doll that is she's a wizard type person, you know, and some of the accoutrements that come with it are made from things like, you know, popsicle sticks and paper clips and things, you know, that found items, I believe we call that in the art world.
Found items, yes. It's a term.
Yeah.
It's a real thing.
Definitely. Do you find that items cross your path?
I do. It's not usually things like paper clips and popsicle sticks, but you know, I will have stones cross my path. Twigs for sure are always calling out when I'm on a hike. the odd feather, bits of dried grass. But if I'm, you know, I really love handmade natural items like handwoven silk.
Yeah.
And even if it's scraps, like when I lived in Thailand, I would go to the market and there was a little seamstress who I could go by. I had to learn the word for scraps in Thai. And I would go get her silk cuttings, and they were gorgeous. She was a tailor, and, you know, if she hemmed an old skirt, I could get, you know, that 2 inches of old hand-woven silk. Or there was another little place in the market where I could go and get little scraps of handmade Hill Tribe fabric when they would put these beautiful adornments on their clothes. And when they were done, they would just take it to the market and sell them. They were still usable, still gorgeous, but.
Yes, absolutely. So here's another question. I've not asked you this ever. If you get really stuck, what do you do then to unstick yourself? I mean, do you journey ever and just say, what is this meant to look like? Show me.
I will do one of several things. If I really get stuck, I walk away. I put it down and I walk away. And typically walking away is better if I go outside.
Mm.
Just change the channel. Go outside, be with nature, listen to the birds, touch the trees. Life is better.
Yeah.
It's like hitting the reset button. That's one thing I do. Sometimes I will put a project down and just leave it and let it sort of gestate on its own. And I mean, I have 2 spirit dolls right now I haven't touched in probably 6 months.
Yeah.
They're not ready to be completed. They're just on pause. And, you know, at some point soon, some new moon, some full moon, I'll get a nudge and they'll be completed probably within about half an hour.
Yeah.
I do journey, or sometimes I just sit with the object in my hand and journey, just again, you know, go into that place where I can have the conversation with the object and see in my head the form it wants to take as opposed to the form I think it should take. This happens a lot. In the watercolors that I do for my children's books, I will do a whole bunch of watercolors before the character finally says, "Hi, here I am. You finally found me."
Yes. So there's a lot of trial and error involved.
Then. Yes.
And you have to be engaged with the materials, obviously. If you are not engaged, I'm guessing, and you could tell me yes or no, that very often if you aren't engaged, nothing just springs up suddenly fully formed in your mind and says, here, go get these materials and you'll have a fully formed, wonderful masterpiece. It looks to me from what you're saying more like
you get no, sometimes material. That actually happens. Go in your art room, get this thing, put that thing on that thing, and then you're done. And it's like, boom.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens too. It's all so very fluid. There's no one way to do it. So if I'm talking to someone out there who thinks they're not creative, I honestly would just say, you know, start to listen and, you know, sometimes these things are fully formed and sometimes they take time and there's a conversation. There's no one way. There's no right way. And the other thing about that is that there's no correct way to create. And the thing that you make with your own hands is going to have so much more life and energy, even if it's imperfect, even if it's just not quite, you know, as perfect as you'd want it to be. The energy of it is going to be so much more vital than something you'd go pick up at a store.
Yes, absolutely. I would concur with that completely. And one of the things that people like myself, who've always had the, you know, opinion that I'm not creative, look at, you know, I look at particularly Northern European houses where people have made things, put things together, you know, sort of like a handmade interior, at least, if not the house itself. And I just look at that and hunger, you know, and then, but then listening to you, I think, well, what is there to stop any of us from being fashioning things that we're going to be having in the inside of our house and then fashioning other things, you know, and rearranging.
Exactly. Creativity, that's another thing that just popped in my head as you were talking. Creativity doesn't mean picking up a paintbrush or writing a novel. It can literally be anything. It can be how you cook your dinner or putting up preserves or, like you say, building a bench in the garden.
Yes, and I'm thinking also that if I know I've hit times of life where I've thought, there is nothing here. This is like being a desert. You know, there is just nothing here. What do you prescribe for that sort of a situation?
Oh, when you feel like you hit a creative dry spot?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Do you go spend time in nature, for instance?
I do. I do. If I'm feeling stuck, it is always nature. That's where I draw my inspiration. That's where I get reinvigorated.
And I would say there is
nothing in my life that a hike can't fix. Honestly.
Yes, I can understand that. One of the things that my husband does for me occasionally is to just stop me and say, take off your shoes. Here is a blueberry. Go out in the, you know, in the back, stand on the grass in your bare feet, you know, and eat a blueberry. Just be there. Be there with the flavors. Be there with the textures. Feel the wind. You know, just be there. And like you say, it's a reset. And it also begins to fill back up the reservoir of vitality out of which, you know, creativity partially arises. It allows you to relate in a way that allows creative things to spring into being, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can you say that a different way? Because I did feel like I was babbling.
You weren't babbling at all. That was perfect. I don't know that I can add much to that. It really is. I just find in all of my work that nature is my source. And if I'm not out connected to nature, I'm out of the flow. And going out to be with, as you say, just to let the sun shine on your face, to be present to the wind on my cheek, or, you know, I'm not much of a gardener, but I do love my native prairie. And, you know, I'll go out and pull weeds there and be just absolutely happy.
Yeah.
And that, you know, putting myself in touch with the elements and Mother Earth, that feeds me and connects me in ways that I need, not only to be creative, but really to just be whole and healthy.
Yes, absolutely. And I would think that, I think personally that there is a bit in our industrial culture that somewhere says in the back of our heads, oh, that's very well and good for her. She's a nature woman. But I don't really somehow, it's not in my nature, or I don't deserve, or something along those lines that keeps us disconnected. And so my invitation to listeners would be to, if you're feeling like you're not a creative person, would be to go outside and just stand barefoot or put your hand down on the actual earth, even if, like me, you've got a square of grass in the back, you know, and that's pretty much it that gives you access. Just to, you know, be there and to say thank you for your life, because without the earth and the plants that, you know, grow in and on her, we don't be here. There's, you know, your physical life totally comes from that. It absolutely depends on it. Mm-hmm. And to say thank you till something comes back to you. And that starts the conversation. You know, it's like when you start the lawnmower and somebody has to pull the cable. You know, I'm sure everybody out there now has electric starts on their lawnmowers, but when I was growing up, you know, we had hand-pulled motor, you know, not electric, but actual motor mowers. And to get it started, you had to actually pull hard on it. You had to do something. You had to intend. You had to begin it yourself. And, you know, for us, we can do that in our relationship with nature. And in doing that, we allow ourselves more space and more relatedness to be creative, I think.
Definitely.
So, if you were going to offer a starting place for people who feel they're not creative, you'd say go outside.
I would start with go outside. My second suggestion would be find a medium. And it doesn't mean it's like the medium you're going to use forever, and it might change a few times, but find a starting place. And it might be picking up a tiny little set of watercolors. It might be getting some clay that you can work with and shape and play. It might be some fiber. You know, maybe you want to do something with fiber, some finger weaving. It doesn't matter what, but pick a medium, let yourself be drawn to a medium, and that is a really excellent starting place. I find that one medium will take you to the next. And, you know, ultimately there's a few that are going to be your favorites, or you're going to find out that you're, you know, oh, I have a talent for this, or I have kind of a knack for, you know, knitting or crochet. You'll find the one that really speaks to you eventually, but, you know, find a medium to start with.
And then play with it, I would think.
And then play with it. And it really is play. You're not looking to create a masterpiece. You're really looking to play. some advice that I got from a singing teacher when I was in high school has served me well my entire life. She used to, because I was very, you know, I wanted to sing pretty. Mm. And I wanted everything to sound, you know, very, very nice. And when we were in rehearsals, she would make me sing ugly. It was a thing. She's like, no, I want you to sing really ugly. I want you to make it sound as ugly as you can. And it was her way of getting me, first of all, just out of my head. And second of all, to put more air and more power behind my voice. And let me tell you, it worked every time. I had bigger volume. I had more sound. And then I could translate that into something that I considered more pretty. But one day when I was working with a watercolor group, we tried painting ugly. I just said, look, you know, here's the advice I got from my singing coach. We're just going to paint ugly. Because, you know, the same thing can apply to anything you're doing. Oh, I really need this to be just perfect. I really, you know, perfectionism is a thing, especially when you're creating. And, you know, we're in the watercolor group together. And I said, yeah, let's just try this. We'll just paint ugly. The stuff we did that day, the stuff we put on paper that day had so much aliveness. They were, these paintings had a freedom to them. And they were great. They were all great, but they were unexpectedly unusual. They weren't the sort of thing we would normally put on paper. And we loved everything that came out of that session.
Isn't that interesting? That really is something.
It's great. And I know I am a creature of perfectionism. And, yeah. You know, this past year, I have been practicing the phrase done, but not perfect. Mm.
And I would guess from my own experience that if you want to squeeze the life out of your own creative self, give over to perfectionism.
Oh, exactly. And then if you really want to squeeze the life out of it, try being critical.
Yes.
So another story. So when I was doing a lot of watercolor, I would paint things and I would look at it and go, gosh, that's awful. I hate that. And once in a while, I would just rip it up. Mm. And I remember coming back to something the next day and looking at it, and it was so good. There were so many nuances of color and how the paint had sort of, you know, you can't control watercolor. You just can't. Yeah. And when it's fully dry, you know, you see things that are really just quite remarkable and unexpected. And, you know, here I had ripped up this thing that turned out to be really wonderful. And I ended up framing part of the scrap as another piece. I worked it into something else because it was beautiful. But being critical of myself and my work and my creativity, I couldn't see that right away.
Mm. And you are, in being critical, sort of holding it up against some external standard.
Yeah, and the question is, what is that standard? What forms that standard? I have no idea in that moment what I was holding that up against. Mm. But
yeah,
I'm
I don't think you need to know. I think it's just, I feel that there is a standard being imposed here. Possibly I should walk away and put down the scissors, you know?
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, when I say find your medium and start, you are going to be a beginner, and things, they won't be perfect, but sometimes the imperfections are the unique beauty of what you've created.
Yes.
And, you know, if you're, as I'm thinking of this, I get images. I get information in images, so it's often very hard to get, translate from the images in my head to actual language. I'm sitting here thinking of fiber and, you know, somebody spinning wool by hand on a wheel or with a drop spindle. And, you know, it's not perfect. Those strands of wool have slubs, and some pieces are thinner and some pieces are thicker, but it's gorgeous.
Yes.
And it's those imperfections that make it that one step more gorgeous.
I think so. I think that variety, and for variety, you can read imperfections in something, particularly like spinning, but, you know, all sorts of creative acts. Variety feeds us. It's one of the things that feeds the soul. Human beings are hungry for variety. Hence the burgeoning human being teenager saying, I'm bored. You know, there's not enough variety in my life. So, yes, embracing it, though, and it's something in ourselves or that we have made, that's dicier for us, I think, because we're so socialized, possibly, into thinking that there are particular standards we need to meet. And, you know, if we don't meet those standards, then it's not good enough, and you don't want to look at it, and, you know, that things just tumble on from there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, and as you were talking, I also thought of sometimes it's not ourselves being critical, it's the fear of others being critical.
Yes.
And when you're making something, when you're creating, you know, I've been creating since I was a little kid, and I always still have to leap over that fear of, oh my God, what if somebody doesn't like this? Or, you know, the fear of what I create being so reflective of my own soul that now I feel a little bit exposed. And, you know, if they criticize my work, they're criticizing me, or maybe just feeling a little bit too vulnerable because I've created something and exposed a piece of my heart.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think it's not untoward to take precautions in that situation. And one of them might be to simply leave that thing until everything settles. You know, it settles in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, writers say until that piece of writing has cooled off, until the heat comes off of it. And then, you know, and then it is what it is. But it doesn't feel so much like you've just plucked a piece of your heart and set it out on display. You know, so there's one thing. And then another is to open sacred space when you go to create, and then close it again when you're through. So that you're protected in your creative arts and in your creative time, And then that protection sort of shrinks down onto your skin. And, you know, and all those places that have been opened up get to be, you know, reasonably closed back down so that you can function in the world and not be, you know, take an arrow to the heart without knowing.
Does that make sense? Yes, absolutely. I was just looking for it. I have, I very often, if I'm crafting a sacred tool or a sacred object or a spirit doll, I will always open with a blessing. Mm. And it's an invocation to my hands that spirit or goddess work through me and allow my hands to create in beauty.
Yes. Were you looking for that so that you could?
I was, and I have it written down somewhere. Obviously, I say it differently probably every time, but I did write it down for one of my classes.
And do you want to, are you finding it, or do you want to just give us a current version?
I'm looking, because I'd love to give it to you the way I wrote it, but if I don't find it.
If you don't find it, you can just ad lib and see what comes out. But if you do, that would be lovely, because it is in itself a starting place for the shamanic practitioner, for the person who is related with spirit and with themselves on a spirit level. It's a good starting place, because everything shifts, you know, when you've invoked all that is, in whatever form you invoke all that is, the great mystery, to then be present with you and to work through your hands, to work through your mind, your voice, or whatever it is that you're using as your medium. And I can hear you thumbing through files on the computer.
And I'm kind of looking, and I'm not coming up with it immediately. Oh, I have a few too many files.
Well, I'm thinking that that's a possible thing that you might want to publish on your blog or on your website at some point in time.
Yeah, it's really very short. I mean, it's literally, let me see if I can just kind of pull it in. Mother, bless that which I am about to create. Allow beauty and spirit to flow through my hands. And bless all those who touch this object. It's about that simple.
Yes. And for any of those things, you could substitute voice and bless all those who hear this music, or, you know, whatever it is, words, and bless all those who read or hear. So, you know, I would say to the listeners, if you're going to employ that, please do. I think that's a fabulous thing to do, a wonderful starting, jumping off place. And then you can craft it to your own need and your own form of creativity.
Yeah, one thing I stress to my students is to write your own prayers and write your own poems. Again, another form of creating, but those prayers, again, you're drawing from your own voice and your own spirit, and you're speaking in a way that's resonant with your soul. But again, it's the same as not going to the store. Whatever you make has more vitality. You know, yes, there's written prayers that we all know, but the ones you write have a life.
Yes.
That's distinct.
Yes, they do. And they,
and there may be a different prayer for every, you know, there, that you know, you can craft the blessing specifically for what it is you're about to do. Yes. As you say, if you're singing, if you're knitting, if you're cooking, the blessing shifts.
Yes. Absolutely. And from time to time, it will shift as well, you know, and it's once again, if you don't listen to, I would say, don't listen to yourself with the critical ear of, I need to get this prayer right.
Exactly.
Pray, you know? Just let it flow. Open your mouth and let the words come out, you know, it will sort itself out because you'll be doing this more than once. You know, this is not a one-time thing. This is an ongoing conversation.
Mm-hmm.
All of it is right. I'm going to shift gears here, and Deb is going to stay with us. But right now, just first, I want to say thank you for those of you who have listened to. I also hope we'll stay with us because we're going to talk a little bit about what Deb is doing and where you can find her and those sorts of things. But also, we're going to take a moment, all of us together, and thank the spirits of the direction. So spirits of the East, of beginnings, of youth, of awkwardness, and of the care and allowing of all of that. Thank you. Spirits of the South, of fierce fullness, of deep satisfaction, of fire, of creativity, that fire in the head. Thank you. Spirits of the West, of the learning to walk into darkness, twilight in between places. Thank you. Spirits of the North, our ancestors and the deep darkness. Thank you. Spirits of above, the sun and the moon, stars, the holy winds and the cloud people. Thank you. And spirit of the earth, our mother. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So, Deb, tell us where we can find you online or physically, really, you know, because you do teach. I do teach.
Right now I'm based in Ohio and most of my retreats happen in Michigan. I have a weekend retreat coming up in June 15 through 17. And that's something I absolutely love doing. I usually do it once or twice a year. This one is Walking with the Goddess, and it is an initiation into the heart and soul and symbols of the divine feminine and women's sacred traditions. It's just a delicious 3 days. The best place to find me is online at my website, which is www.floweringmoon.com. And from there, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram and
places like that.
And places like that. I was thinking, no, I think those are the only ones I have, Facebook and Instagram.
And from time to time on your Facebook feed, I see gorgeous things that you've made that you then sell. So what currently are you selling? And
well, currently I have the Home Blessing and Smudge Kit available. And I have, everything I do is kind of limited edition. I have just 20 that are available. And I worked with I already mentioned the goose feather fan that I made. And then I worked with a potter, a friend of mine who does the most amazing pottery, and she created the ceramic smudge bowls for me. And I worked with another artist to source the most beautiful lavender and sage smudge bundles I have literally ever worked with. The sage is unbelievable. Another family-run farm here poured beeswax candles, and then I include instructions and detailed enough. You know, if you've been doing smudging, I think you'll find part of the instructions to be at a level that is not novice, but beginners can certainly use these. I really enjoyed pulling all these parts together and making it beautiful and easy to work with, but beautiful. I just love opening these, and the scent and the textures are just phenomenal.
Yes, I'm imagining that because the, you know, handmade ceramics are like that. Plus, beeswax has its own smell, and feel, and you know, and dried lavender and sage, you know, just beyond beautiful. So it sounds like just luxury in terms of what is there. How much are those?
Those are $40.
Okay.
Plus shipping.
So that's completely reasonable. And then I'm going to move you straight on, because I sent to my granddaughter a copy of your book, April's Rain, and she loved it. So tell us a little bit about April's Rain.
Oh, goodness. I am so enchanted with this first children's book. It's part of a series of four. The other three are in the making. April's Rain is about a very young fairy who has to figure out how to make it rain. And she gets some very unusual advice from her animal friends.
Sounds delightful. And that also is available on your website.
That is, so there's a link on my website at floweringmoon.com, but you can also go straight to April's website, which is aprilsrainbook.com.
Okay.
And pretty soon, April will be joined by her friend Lily. And Lily just makes me giggle, because Lily, her best friend is a little red dragonfly.
Oh.
And Lily has to be rescued after a little boy puts her in a jar and takes her home, not knowing she's not a dragonfly.
Oh, dear.
Mistakes are for a dragonfly. So, yes, the her animal friends have to go to great lengths to rescue Lily.
Outstanding. So when will that book be available?
Well, I have to finish the art, so I'm hoping that by next year that one will be in print. Excellent. And then there's two more right behind it, and in perfect shamanic tradition, we have the four seasons represented, and there's every one of them will feature a little cast of creatures.
Good.
So we have salamanders and snails. There's a very grumpy toad in April's Rain that I just absolutely love. He makes me laugh. A stubborn raccoon in the Autumn Story, and a very chubby-cheeked chipmunk in the Winter Story.
Mm. Perfect.
the kids love it. And what really tickles me is that after the kids read these books, they kind of run off and start writing their own stories and making their own art. So initially I wasn't going to be the illustrator. I had made these watercolors as sort of the placeholder for the real, the quote, real illustrator. But a teacher friend of mine test drove the first two books in her classrooms, and the kids were loving these. And And when I heard her come back and tell me that the kids were running off and making their own art and, you know, starting to write their own stories, I knew that I couldn't change the art. There was a simplicity about these watercolors that the kids really loved. So there we are. I am both writer and illustrator.
How wonderful. I really would like to just sit here and talk about that. We should have started earlier, but we're running out of time. So thank you so much for joining us, Deb. And we'll just enjoy April's Rain and be looking forward to the one with the little red dragonfly and the rest of them as they come out.
Oh,
and
thank
I
you.
Urge listeners to go just have a look at floweringmoon.com and enjoy your trip through the website. And I'm going to now, Nicole, I'm going to hand back over to you, and we'll say goodbye. So goodbye to everyone, and thank you for listening.